Welcome to episode number 19 of the First Responder Wellness Podcast, the show where we talk about wellness, mental health, leadership, and what it takes to have a wellness culture within your organization. My name is Conrad Weaver, and I hope you're having a great start to the new year and that you're healthy and taking care of yourself. Today on the show, I have Captain Jeremy Fuller. He's with the Little Elm Fire Department in Little Elm, Texas, and they have a very unique wellness program that you're going to want to hear about. Jeremy convinced the city leaders to put a line item in their budget to cover all of the fire department's mental health care. 100%, it's all covered. This program has been so successful that other agencies are seeking him out to learn how they did it, and they have a waiting list of people signing up to join their department. That's pretty unusual in today's world. Today on the show, Jeremy talks about how they accomplished this and a little bit about the results of this amazing program. So stay tuned for this important conversation. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. There's a ton of podcasts out there, and so I appreciate you taking time to listen in. I'm also grateful for everyone who's joining us on YouTube. Thanks for watching. And whether you're on your favorite podcast app or watching on YouTube, be sure to subscribe. This really helps us get the word out and get the show to more people. Thanks again for listening and watching. And now back to the show. Well, Jeremy, welcome to the First Responder Wellness Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Conrad. Appreciate you.
So tell us a little bit about what do you do? Who are you and what do you do?
I'm a captain over training at Little Elm Fire Department in Little Elm, Texas. About 21 years in the career. And I come from a family of first responders. My dad and grandfather and brother and a whole line of firefighters that I come from. I grew up in the service. And so it's obviously what I always knew I wanted to do. And got a family, a wife of over 20 something years and two teenage kids in high school. And now we're where I am here later in my career as I'm in the administrative role in the office is one of my biggest passions is pushing for programs for our people and other agencies. I inherited a black cloud career, so to speak, from my father. He always was always at the craziest scenes you could imagine, and he had his arm cut off his first day of his career.
Wow!
And Big Baylor back in '87, they repaired his arm with parts from his leg, and he had quite the extensive recovery and had to fight for his job and go through paramedic school at the same time and everything. And then was able to accomplish that and go on with a 30-year career. And then as I went through my career, I started seeing kind of having that cloud over me and experienced a lot of my own injuries, saw lots of bad things on some bad calls and whatnot. I was a part of a couple of line of duties in my career. And so a lot of things hit me pretty hard where I saw the need for trying to do something for our people and which started with the department I'm at with Little Elm, and probably about maybe 10 to 12 years ago, I started really pushing for a program. And in all honesty, it was just me and a chaplain kind of was the basis of the program for a while. And I knew I still needed more, and I failed at it for many years of trying to get the guys something that would work, that would cross that stigma. Mm-hmm. And it really, till about 4 years ago, I met Dr. T shortly after she moved from California. And she was just trying to get started here. And we met out at horse ranch. So my mom created our watch, which is equine therapy for first responders. And Dr. T had caught wind of that and was starting to get involved in that. And that's where I met her out on the horse ranch. And we were having general conversation, and I started kind of picking up on some of her lingo, and I was like, you're interesting. Like, what do you do? What can we meet for lunch? And we ended up regularly going to lunch together and starting to plan, trying to create a program for Little Elm. And one thing led to the next. And after about a year of meeting and writing proposals for council and the program that we had envisioned, it finally happened, and we won money for it, and a yearly budget for mental health. And then one thing led to the next, and her business, the agencies around the area started catching wind of what we were doing. And so I kind of started, as we started to find success within our own department of changing the culture and breaking the stigma, other departments were kind of wanting the same thing. So I started switching gears after about a year or two of success with our own department, and started also pushing to help other agencies in our North Texas area, trying to get them the same thing.
And let's go back in your earlier in your career. What was any kind of information, training, resources related to wellness, mental health issues? Was there anything?
Nothing, really nothing at all. I would say probably the basis of it was more so based on religion. So because we've always had a chaplain. And most departments do. And I think that's great, you know, spiritually for the guys that can accept that and lean on religion and the spirituality to help with some of those situations. But within even our own department, I found that that wasn't okay for a lot of people, you know. So I think that's where, as I first started doing all the everything, I kept our chaplain highly involved, and our chaplain and Dr. T and myself would meet pretty regularly to try to keep a well-rounded program that involves spirituality and the science of the brain and what was going on with, which is what Dr. T is very good at.
So what was when you started kind of researching this and looking into what we can do, what was your motivation personally?
Personally was knowing what my dad had went through and seeing the path of my father's experiences, and he was the Iron Man. You know, he was just, nothing affected him. He was the toughest guy I've ever met. You know, seeing what he went through with getting his arm cut off, emotionally, he was always pushing me through sports, like through all of my surgeries and injuries that I ever experienced. It was basically like, you have to win, you know, and you have to be tough. And he taught me a lot of that. And then at the end of his career, I started seeing where there was issues with that. And so even within my own experiences of being involved in a couple of line of duty deaths, one of the line of duties that I experienced early in my career was a rookie that he came and relieved me early, and, you know, as most good rookies do, they come an hour or more before their own shift and they're ready to go. And, this kid was getting at it. I say kid, he already had children himself. And I didn't. And so he came and relieved me, and, he was killed before I even got home with my crew. And so I wore that pretty heavily on my shoulders for years. I saw ways that affected me in my life, as well as other things that kind of just piled onto my plate with the career as I went on. I'm lucky enough to still have my wife of over 20 years and all that we've been through together. is kind of my lesson of to my peers and everybody, that I want them to have a better life and to be able to go home and have a better marriage and not have to have those struggles that some may or may not make it through. Mm-hmm.
So what was the process? I know you went you met Dr. T, you saw what she was doing. What did you see there that she was doing that you thought, hey, maybe we can do this in our department?
It was the language that she had spoke. So through my path, there had been a few moments in my career where I had used EAP and I had reached out to some counselors that were provided through an EAP system through our employment. And I always heard about the stigma and stuff. And then I went and experienced it myself and saw that, yeah, these people can't help us. They don't understand what we're going through. I sat and I listened and I'm like, no, this is not going to work for me, you know? And then I would hear all the same stories as well. So like, it was like we had nothing. And so whenever I met Dr. T, and she basically was speaking our language right off the bat, because she comes from the background. Her father was a 30-year police officer at L.A. County Sheriff's Office, and her brother is a policeman. Her mom was a nurse, and so she's grown up in it. And so she had a special knack to talk the language and kind of make us feel special. And it was the science of it. So like when she speaks the language and she talks about the science of the body, whereas medical people were, that's kind of the thing we need to hear, you know, what's going on inside our brains and what happens when we feel this way. When we feel this way, why do we feel that way? And what can we do about it? And she was very good. That's what I started picking up on, was the language that she was speaking, you know. And then as we progressed into talking about the program, she was hitting all the right key notes on kind of the plan. Like, this is what we can do. And we can get them set up for therapy. We can get them set up for different physical things. And the whole program, I guess, it kind of went around the theory that your physical health is mental health, and mental health is your physical health. Like, it all kind of works together. And so it's like, not only do you have to take care of your brain and understand what's going on and inside it and train your brain as a muscle, you have to get your body moving and do the things that release the adrenalines and keep the chemistry in your body right.
I think that's such a foreign concept for many people, that there's a connection there. I think probably in the more recent years that's become more and more known, but I think historically it's been like there's two separate things, and we don't understand those two things and how they interact.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's what she's kind of exposed for everybody. And I mean, not only is she an excellent speaker, but the way that she speaks about that stuff, it really catches everybody's eye, and it's something different that we haven't heard before. Mm-hmm. And we could trust her being from the background.
Yeah. What was some of the feedback or the response from people in your department and even some of the higher ups?
So when I first started working with her and trying to build this program, I wasn't an administrative captain yet. I was actually a captain on the line still. And nobody had really, I'm in a smaller department of about 80 people. And so nobody was over health and wellness. Nobody was really taking that ball and running with it. It was still kind of like, we don't need that, you know, it's, we can take care of our own and stuff. And I was criticized, you know, very much so. So the, you know, when we started, the way I started implementing things, I hadn't quite won the budget yet. Dr. T and I were, she helped me write up the whole process that was going to be presented to council. And I started kind of sneaking her in the door, doing things under training budget money. And just considering, like, this is just training for our guys and train the brain. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to use a little bit of money to get her in the door that way. And just immediately as I started putting her on the calendar, people were like, what is this? What are you signing me up for? And then some of our senior guys, mainly, I was approached because one of the first things I did was I got us the mental health, mental wellness checks with Dr. T. So she came in and started meeting every one of our people. And I was setting up these meetings where everybody got 30 minutes apiece with her. And some of our most senior guys that I've been close to for many years that we've grown up together would come in and Fuller, what the hell are you setting us up for? Like, what are you making me do? You know, and this is crap. I don't need this. And I'm like, look, just sit down. This is a benefit for you. It's nobody's going to know about it. It's confidential. And you can bitch about work. You can do whatever. It's your time to sit with a therapist and just get some stuff off your chest, you know. Mm-hmm. And if anything, you don't have to say anything. Just sit there and listen to her and see what she has to say. And what's funny is I did get some responses. Two of those senior guys that came and approached me in that manner later on emailed me and thanked me for setting that up. And they were surprised at what the direction it was going. And then a little bit after that, I started bringing her onto groups and kind of having like a class-wide training opportunity where everybody could kind of be exposed to the way she was talking. And it didn't take very, very long for people to start saying, like, this is okay. Like, this is different. This is, I like this. And and then the other big turn that really worked was I got the spouses involved. Mm. And so we did couples nights and things like that, that the spouses were included, and not only in the trainings, but also in therapy. So within our budget, we cover all the families of our first responders and any children they'd like to get into therapy and their spouses as well. And mm-hmm. that was a huge turn of events where I noticed I even within myself, I would hear cool stuff that Dr. T was talking about. I would go home to my wife and I'd say, babe, I found it. Like, this is like the key right here that to help us. And she's like, well, what is it? You know? And I'm like, oh, it's really cool. You know, it's just cool stuff. And you know how, as I think as men, as we try to transfer information to our spouses at home, there's that barrier of communication. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of jumped that hoop by including the spouses, where the spouses were like, where the hell has this been for 20 plus years? Like, this is great, you know? And so that was pretty huge.
I think first thing is having a therapist and someone who understands the culture, that's vital, right?
Yes, sir.
Because if you'd have had Dr. T there and she didn't understand firefighting culture and these people, your seniors would have come in there to meet with her, they'd have been like, we're out, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how did you convince the bean counters to put it in the budget? What was that conversation like?
I was, the other line of duty death that I was involved in was happened to be with our police department in 2017. And, Jerry Walker was shot in the neck on a shooting scene in a neighborhood. And he was a 20 plus year guy, that was involved in our small town for years and years. And was a SRO, a school resource officer, within our school systems. And this guy knew everybody in town. And so that was kind of a situation that devastated not only fire and police, but the entire town. And so between that happening and the years to come that followed, it was pretty obvious, even from the administration over at town hall, that these guys are struggling. Like there's turnover, there's sick time abuse, there's all kinds of things going on. And so we kind of had that in our pocket of these guys need something. And so I went after it, and with Dr. T's wording as well, like we wrote a beautiful proposal that you could not say no to. And then really the only thing I regretted was I didn't ask for enough. The vote, they literally didn't even blink an eye. I mean, the vote took all of 5 seconds and they were like, yep, you're good. Take your money. And so I still, to this day, that was about 4 years ago. So to this day, I still have the same amount of money and I have more people. But we've learned how to strategically use that money to where we're not spending it all real quick. I make it last through the year, and we got different ways, like assist the officer donates quite a lot of money. We're able to get guys in for therapy at cheaper cost and still pay for it. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of little ways of the game that we've learned to make the money go further.
Mm-hmm. I know it's probably hard to calculate, but what's been the savings that has provided you guys as far as on the back end?
Huge. We as in the fire department right now, we basically have no turnover. As a small department in the Metroplex that's surrounded by places like Frisco and Plano that are starting firefighters out at $100,000 a year, to compete with that, about the only thing that we can offer is that we provide a good culture and a caring employment, that these guys are going to get cared for from them all the way to their family. So it's truly a family first. Like, we got your back. You're not going to lose your job when you start going through struggles, and building a culture that it's okay to not be okay. We can help. We actually have the program now that works, and it's proven. And I got guys that are former military guys that are captains of crews, that at one point they were my naysayers and they doubted what we were doing with this program. And they've turned to that there's open conversations at the dinner tables at the firehouses, that the of their personal experiences, the therapists that they're using, and they're sharing that with their crews as examples and being leaders in that realm. And I hear that a lot. Talking about the other agencies around us, we're staying competitive in the applicant numbers that we get, and which is a real struggle right now in the fire service. It's really competitive in hiring, and we're able to still keep up, if not have more applicants than some of these bigger departments, paying way more starting salaries than what we can provide. And that's what I hear around as we do, as I'm over hiring. That's kind of what I hear all the time, is that when I ask people, what are you looking for? What do you like about us? It's like, we like the reputation, the culture that, you guys have built. And it's just a really caring environment.
What's been the response from the families?
Phenomenal. I do know that the families are widely using the program, and I don't know exactly who all the time, unless they come to me directly. A lot of guys trust in me to where they'll come to me and be like, "Hey, man, I need the number. I want to make a call. Me and my wife want to get in to some therapy," and so no problem. But I also provide the program on a confidential level where these guys can call and make their own appointments, and I just pay invoices that come in. I don't ever know who it is that I'm paying for. I pay first. We'll send me a code or invoice with codes, so I have no idea who they are. I see it all the time. You know, recently, one situation I can speak of is recently we lost one of our guys' spouses to cancer. And she was one of our senior guys. It's grown up in town. They both grew up together. They were high school sweethearts. Everybody in town knows his wife and himself. And within her going through all of that to begin with, we got her into counseling, and she kept telling me, even like as she was down on her later days in life, she would tell me, "Thank you so much. That did so much for me to be able to sit down and talk with somebody that understands." And she ended up becoming pretty close with her counselor, actually. And there's several situations like that that I haven't ever heard a bad story, you know, that's and First has done a good job. I think there's about we've built about 20 counselors now with First, and they're all vetted within some sort of first responder background and speak the language, and they're trained by Dr. T. And so I always tell the guys and their spouses, you know, if by all means, if you have any issues, if you don't like your counselor or what she's saying, just let me know. We can get you another one. And that's never the case. They all love it and very appreciative of what we can offer through them. Mm-hmm.
So let's walk through, what's that look like? You have a firefighter who's maybe struggling, maybe they're starting to recognize that they're drinking too much, or they're doing some other behaviors that are outside of the expected norms. What do you guys do? What's the process to get them to a better place?
I don't necessarily have to know, and that's kind of part of the education of the program. So it's part of my job is to expose the program as a confidential piece, like, because I do understand, you know, I'm in a supervisor level position. These guys may not feel comfortable coming to me and exposing some sensitive material, personal stuff like that. And so they are able to just make a phone call over to First and schedule an appointment and say, "Hey, I'm with Little Elm." And then First knows, like, Little Elm's got you covered. And so they just get on the invoice, and then they start to plan a treatment through them, and however that looks, whether if it's just basic therapy or even some physical stuff over at the sports academy, if that's what's needed. But to be honest, most of the time, I have people that will either go to somebody that they trust, that they'll ask, and then that person will come to me like, "Hey, so-and-so, is having some trouble, and I really need, to get them going," you know, and they'll try to get my advice to get them going. Most of the time I just give them the contact and say, "Let me know if you need any of my help. I can help explain it all." And there'll never be a charge for anything. And then sometimes they come directly to me. And even yesterday I had a case with a guy sitting in here, and I could tell he was really beat up. He's going through a whole lot right now. And I sat here with him, and I made the appointment myself with him. And he trusted that I was taking care of things and got him set up for an appointment, which is actually today. So a quick turnaround. If I can sense that this is a very urgent need, then we're going to get him in the next day or even the same day on some cases. Mm-hmm. And then money-wise, that's my goal for these people, is to make it easy. You know, I don't want any monetary reasons to be a hiccup in their therapy and their path. I don't want anything to keep them from calling and making that appointment. So if I have to, I'll sit here and make an appointment for them.
Does this program also include residential treatment?
Residential treatment?
Mm-hmm.
Like
substance abuse, like if they go away for 30 days to a place for rehab or for recovery?
So we do have different options on that. I haven't had to do that yet. Actually Todd and I have been we've had that on our research list for quite a while. And we haven't actually had the situation to get to send somebody there yet, but we have basically a resource list, and we've gone out and we've vetted some certain places that can do outpatient and inpatient care. And, you know, so far I do know of probably one of my favorites is Stonegate Ranch that I would like to try as a place that we can basically like a horse ranch style place that you can send people out to, and they have inpatient care and all that. So some of that's still on the building blocks of what Todd and I've been trying to do, and have that kind of go-to place. And within FIRST, that component for inpatient treatment is not there yet. But there's things that they do for that. And we kind of lean on Dr. T as for that case, you know, if somebody's really needing that. And still, that's also part of the, I think that's probably also deep within the stigma. People, you know, there's still people, I think, that I know they're having some substance abuse issues. But that one's something they're still kind of holding close to them as not wanting the supervisors to know much about, you know. So that's my goal, is just if they're getting into their counseling and they're exposing that personally, then that's great. Like, I just, as long as they're talking to somebody and getting it taken care of, I really don't need to know the details, you know.
And so how long did it take for you guys to get people comfortable and starting to say, hey, you're coming into your office, say, hey, I need help, or I need to talk to someone? How long did that process take? I'm sure it wasn't just an overnight thing. You started this program and people were immediately like, I need to talk to someone. So how long did that take?
Man, I would say the better part of probably 2 years, about 2 years, to where as the program and Dr. T herself got exposed and people started trusting that, hey, what we just built is a good thing. And word started getting around, and other naysayers that were leaders in our department started speaking good about it with their own crews, that trust started kind of coming all together. And I wear many hats in our department, and I would say health and wellness is one of them that I'm over, and that's probably one of my most busy. And I do training, EMS, hiring, compliance, and then health and wellness is one that's my biggest passion, and it probably keeps me the busiest now because of the trust that's there now. And so my chief kind of teases me a little bit, you know, they got me a couch and stuff here in my office. So, so the guy's like, yeah, you need to go sit on Fuller's couch for a little bit. But my doors are closed all the time from those kinds of private meetings that are happening. And so chief knows that, that the program is being used. It is a success, you know, even if it happens on a peer level, there are a lot of those contacts that are happening. And we're also training our peer teams through Dr. T's program to be able to take care of, kind of be a first line for things on a peer level, you know. And so we do have a peer team that's been a pretty effective. And, you know, if that doesn't work, and most of the times there's some situations can be taken care of by peer talks and whatnot. But most of the time we can filter out and find out if there's a need where they need to take it a little further, and we offer our resources.
So let's talk a little bit about the finances of it. You don't have to give me numbers, but what's the percentage of your budget would you say that this program covers?
Right now we got about $15,000, for, a year per year. And that covers about 80 people, which is not a lot of money for 80 people. If you were to look at, you know, a therapy session costing on average of about $150 a pop, and that doesn't go very far. But that's why we've had to find different ways of the game to pay for things. You know, we've been able to find ways to utilize EAP, which is a big stigma in the past. Mm-hmm. And now we're able to use EAP certain ways. We're able to use donated funds quite a lot. There's a lot of little avenues that we've found tricks to the trade to be able to stretch that money out. But percentage wise, it's still way small. You know,
that's a small percentage of your overall budget.
Oh, very much so. It's probably one of the smaller line items there is, mm-hmm. and which is sad because you know that's the theory on all this is like we need money to take care of our guys, and you got all these $1 million apparatus that we're out there driving around and using, and all this fancy equipment, and like what kind of investment are you putting into the people that are operating these mm-hmm. things, you know?
I think that's the question that, you know, community leaders need to hear, you know, those things, you know, okay, if we're spending, you know, $1.6 million on a new ladder truck, you know, what are we spending for the guys that operate it, right?
Absolutely.
You know, are we going to have healthy people running this expensive equipment?
Absolutely. Yep. That's the name of the game. And that kind of comes towards where we are now with our reputation and having healthy people, physically and mentally, you know, that's, I've been around the fire service a long time and I'm a little bit biased, but, that's something I can speak highly of with our guys here. We are taking care of ourselves, man. You look around, you got all these guys that are just ripped as can be. They're healthy. Their minds are healthy. They're out there working out together, doing things together. They're having those important talks. They're waking up in the mornings and sitting at the kitchen table, drinking coffee, reading the Bible together, doing different things. And I haven't in years of being in the fire service, even here in Little Elm, I haven't seen anything like it before. I'm very impressed with the way that the culture has changed here. Mm-hmm.
And that comes to a place in where leadership is supporting that, right?
Yes, sir.
If you didn't have leadership that was on board and if they were like blasé about it or weren't committed to it, then it probably wouldn't have carried through, right?
Yes, sir. Yep. I'm very fortunate to have had the leadership's backing from pretty much from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. What gives you personally the biggest satisfaction with this program?
Knowing that since I do get approached a lot and I'm seeing some of these situations firsthand, I'm one of the only ones that know a lot of these guys' situation and how down and deep that they can go sometimes before they come and reach out. It's just for me super rewarding. It's therapeutic in a way itself to be able to have a resource and have an answer. As I used to be the guy that I knew my programs that I was attempting to do was failing, and I had nothing for these people except for just talking to them myself and just offering up a chaplain service if that's all I had. Mm-hmm. And now I see these guys go through things. They go to therapy and some of them have gone to some physical programs as well within the sports academy. And they come out and they treat me like the best friend. They're like, give me a hug. I love you. Thank you for doing that for us and me and my wife. And then so I get the satisfaction of like seeing the turnaround of these people and how happy they are and that it worked, mm-hmm. you know? And so, man, it's super rewarding.
So what can someone do? Say there's a captain, let's just pick a city, Cheyenne, Wyoming, and they're a captain there, but they don't have a Dr. T, they don't have a sports academy. What can they do to get something like this rolling?
Great question. So that's kind of become some of my passion over the last couple of years is helping these other agencies. Since the word's kind of spread, I do get contacted a lot. Dr. T and I have gotten pretty good at meeting with these other agencies when that question comes. 2 days ago, 2 days ago, I got a call from East Texas, from Longview, from a buddy that has buddies at Longview Fire Department. And over in East Texas, you know, it's a little bit in the sticks. It's kind of takes a little longer for things to get over there. And they're interested. And so that's kind of one thing Dr. T and I have been doing a lot, where we've met with these agencies and we've showed them basically the proof in the pudding. Like, here, I'm a small department. We've accomplished this and it's working, and y'all can do it too with very little amount of money. And we can help you get the money. We can show you the way. We can show you, we can share our policy. You can copy our policy on it, and then you can get past the stigma. So I think that's for somebody that's way out there and that don't have anything, like this yet. It's, you got to know that it's out there somehow to begin with. And then that's where I've come in on several occasions and met with these departments. It wasn't long ago that I met with Salina Fire Department, and they brought me over with a fire chief, a police chief, a town manager, their HR representatives. And we sat in a round table and they picked apart what I was doing with the program, and they were immediately like, that's what we want to do. That sounds like that's the winner. It's going to work. And then as well on other educational sides. So Dr. T does a 3-day conference twice a year, and I've been assisting her in that. And so I'll speak on certain panels that have to do with roadblocks. And so we speak a lot on, we'll have an open forum panel where the audience can ask questions like, what do you do if you got a chief that is absolutely against this? What do you do if everybody's on board, but you just can't get the money past council? You know, and we've already been through all of that. And so we, most of the time it's like, we can help. This is what we did. They ask their questions. I tell them the answers. And then I also provide myself as a resource, like, give me a call. I will come and I will meet with your heads, and we'll talk through this on how you can make it happen at your department, how you get over the stigma, how do you get buy-in past the senior guys that are going to bash you over it for a year, you know?
Yeah. Wow. You guys have really done some amazing things there. And that's, I mean, so congratulations on that, and good for you. Are you willing to talk to people? Is there a contact number or an email that you can give out that people can reach out to you?
Absolutely. My email is jfuller@littleelm.org. And, that's my biggest passion, man. I could talk forever when it comes to somebody that wants to come and sit down. I've helped agencies that are way bigger than us get a program, and way smaller as well. There's really no size or anything. And sometimes that's part of the conversation that I end up having with people, because they come in with the doubts, you know, and they're like, there's no way we're going to get this money, you know, or there's no way we can make this happen. It just seems like an impossible feat, but it's not. Mm.
Do you think, I know back east here, there's a lot of, especially in the rural areas, there's a lot of volunteers, all volunteer stations. Something like this could potentially work for that kind of agency as well?
Absolutely. 100%. Yep. My heart's close to the volunteer agencies. That's the way I started out in Little Elm back in 2001. And we were a small department of only 3 paid people. And now we're at 80 today, but there's still volunteer departments around us that are similar, that are just now growing. And, as well, you know, a lot of volunteer departments, have, easier access to grants and stuff like that anyway. So there's a lot of times where a volunteer department might have, easier access to money than we do.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, it's amazing what you guys are doing there, and thank you for sharing this. And hopefully, we can get some other people connected to you guys, and spread the information, spread the wealth, so to speak, and get the help that people need. It's such a needed thing that you guys are doing, and And sounds like I need to reach out to Dr. T again and say, I need to get her on the show and to talk more about what she's doing.
She is just an angel and to our people. And I always call her that, as my angel. You know, she's, she's helped so many people in our service, and she has such a great passion for it. Mm-hmm. And just listening to her speak, I've heard her, I've tagged along with her on several different, trainings that she's done and conferences. And I learned something every time from her, you know, she is just such a, she's not only that, she's pretty entertaining when she speaks as well. She can run a crowd pretty good.
Yeah. And for those of you who don't know Dr. T, she's Dr. Heather Twiddell from First in the Dallas metro area there. And if you want to know more about her, watch the PTSD 911 film, because she's featured in that film. Her organization is featured in the film. And we are really thankful to have her be a part of that. And we're actually going to put more of my interviews with her and her team in the educational toolkit. We haven't done that yet, but it's going to come for agencies that purchase the film. All that information will be available in addition to the film. So we're going to add that kind of puts it on top of my list to add that to the educational toolkit, so that people can know more about her and the work that she does. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Great. And just 20 plus years.
Well, thank you for that. Just the fact that they can use the same facilities that the Dallas Cowboys use is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and in the film, we were there, we filmed at this facility and so it was really, really a phenomenal place and what they, you know, and she treats first responders as elite athletes and does the training with them. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, we've had a huge response on a few occasions where we've had guys with some more so physical issues, eating disorders and whatnot. And we've actually utilized that with about four of our members, where we've paid for memberships to Sports Academy. So they'll go to a therapy session once a week, and then the three times a week they'll be going to their personal trainer at the Sports Academy and using those facilities. And what we did was we started them off with their elite assessment programs, where they sit on all these machines. And then Dr. Chase, which is Dr. T's husband, he does the physical side of things. And so he came and sat down with me and the individual and had like a 10-page report that said all this stuff in the beginning and like all the way down to where this guy had his most possibilities for injury in his body. And then for 3 months, they worked on these programs, and then they did another assessment at the end. And man, the results were phenomenal, where we were able to get these people back on duty and healthy and saying that changed their lives. And after putting some people through those programs, I got two individuals now that are over 50 that are still currently using the program. And they said they don't care if they have to pay for it themselves. They're still going to go.
Wow. Wow. Well, you got to be careful. You're going to have people lining up to work at your agency just to have access to that.
I hope so.
That'd be a good thing. It wouldn't be a bad thing for sure.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing what you guys are doing there in Little Elm. I really appreciate it, and looking forward to getting this podcast out there to let the world know about what you guys are doing.
Thank you, Conrad. And I appreciate all your support and everything you do for us as well.
Absolutely. Jeremy, thanks so much for spending time with me today on the podcast. And thanks to all of you who have taken time to listen, to watch, and especially to those of you who have taken time to leave a review. I really appreciate it. And if you haven't left a review yet, please do so. I want to be sure I'm bringing content to you that you want to hear, and your reviews help me do that. And remember, you are not alone. And if you need someone to talk to and don't know where you can turn, you can always dial 988. I want to hear. Be sure to tune in next week for another interview with an amazing first responder. Until next time, be well, take care of yourself and those around you, and go out and do something good in the world.